Start.
Hello, Rahul and Aditya. So I think it's great that we finally made it together on a podcast. We have been planning this for a long time. And I guess we have something to speak today, right?
I guess so. But what has taken us so long? Do you have anything in mind?
Yeah. I think mostly being lazy. And pretending to work at work and thinking about the podcast, but not actually doing anything about it. So that was my thing.
In my case, I really hate listening to my own voice on other platforms. I don't know if others have the same feeling.
No, Rahul? I had that same feeling. Sorry, yeah. Before Rahul goes, I had that same feeling. But then I sort of fell in love with my voice after I heard it for the first time.
Oh. Awesome, Rahul.
I don't have a positive feeling after listening to my own voice either. But then, I mean, it's a matter of getting. I mean, it's something very similar to getting used to your college canteen food. Although it's horseshit, we all know that.
Yeah.
We still manage to eat it on a regular basis. So I would say it's something like that.
I don't know if it's a universal feeling.
Yes, it is.
I don't know if it's a universal feeling of people detesting their own voice, or probably we have our own perceptions of how we sound.
Yeah.
Within our own.
So basically, when you are speaking on the phone without a headphone on, you basically cannot hear how you actually sound unless and until you hear a recording. And it sounds very different. I mean, I sound very different than I think I actually sound.
Okay. I sound a lot smarter in my own head also. But
yeah.
That's for another day. Okay. So,
yeah. So basically,
Mayuk, you can go ahead and set it up and set us up for the agenda for today.
I think so. It's really good that all three of us are ready to do this, especially because neither of us are in, forget about the same room, we are not in the same time zone. Rahul is very, very far away. He's in Sweden. And I frankly don't know what's the time there.
It's about to be midnight. It's 5 minutes past 11:30.
Aditya is on the east coast of the US. He is probably on the eastern time zone. It's 5:35 p.m. So yeah, and it's 2:30 here in California. So very different time zones. We still managed to find time to do this, which suggests that we are really interested. That is good. Another thing that really struck me was we do have a lot of things in common, right? Apart from the fact that we did engineering, apart from the fact that we got a higher education degree and moved out of the country, our roots are similar in a way that we grew up in Thane and Dombivli, right? So one thing that I think we discussed earlier is this is probably a high point for Thane and Dombivli, that both these townships are being discussed on a podcast, which most likely will be distributed by iTunes as well, by three former citizens or residents, whatever you can call it. So it's of
Thane district.
Thane district.
Broadly,
yeah. And then I think the municipal corporation or the local government should really be proud that they are on this platform, and they have raised three good people. I don't know,
at a minimum of three good people.
So it's something that they should be proud of. Whether I am proud of it, that's a different question. I'll let both of you answer that.
I think if they wave my toll, my answer is very clear from the.
I think you've been out of touch with the toll situation. I think most of the tolls in and around Bombay have been waved off.
Except for the one in Mulund.
Except for that one, true.
Yeah, I mean, Mulund toll is like part of life, right?
life now. Mulund, and there is another one at Airoli, which probably they feel Airoli is some entry port of entry to Mumbai or something like that. I don't know why they. Yeah. And any so, in I any mean, case,
Mark Twain once said, right? It's the death and taxes. You can never get rid of them. I think he should have added Mulund Toll Naka also in that list.
So that reminds me. So there's one thing which will strike you about people from Navi Mumbai.
So let's go into that. Let us make it clear that we are more closer geographically to Mumbai than Navi Mumbai, right? Is that so? Like it's probably true in case of Thane, but not. Is it true for in case of Dombivli?
Same, I think.
Okay.
Essentially, but, the same.
I mean, at least we are being honest here, and we are not claiming that we are actually Mumbaikars. Although, to a certain extent, we are. But we made it clear that okay, we are not exactly from Mumbai, but.
But Navi Mumbai is also an afterthought. Like it's a 20-year-old city at best.
Yes. So
in any case, it
looks what like, I'm trying to get is the point that I'm trying to make is. If we call ourselves Mumbaikars, it is less of a crime than someone who stays in Panvel calling themselves Mumbaikars, right?
So I think the high point for someone from Panvel is actually getting to Vashi. So I think for a long time, I remember, if you have to get people from Panvel outside of Vashi, I think they become extremely uncomfortable. I think center one is the Statue of Liberty for them. So they all go there, they pose there. And I think, I don't know if it still exists though. So getting a McDonald's burger from center one would be the high point of people's year, you know, at some point, like while we were in college. So I think center one, and some of those malls in and around Center One was, I think, the capital of Navi Mumbai. Like Vashi is practically where they can their world ends.
Yeah, I remember we had friends who did not want to travel all the way to South Mumbai, and they said
South Mumbai is a part of another continent altogether. Yeah.
So that's where basically the psyche comes in. We are slightly different than folks who are living in Navi Mumbai. I mean, one thing that I wonder occasionally is, do we have something in us that is very specific to Thane and Dombivli?
So how was your childhood growing up? I think let's start with that. Like, what were your typical childhood vacations like? I think let's start with Rahul with this, because I think he's lived in both Thane and Dombivli at some point, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did study for a period of a year, or I completed one academic session at SIA school.
Which I am not aware of. I think at some point we were both in the same school and in quite the same... Probably,
quite true. Yeah, quite likely. So that was a very brief stint, and that was purely to do with a personal situation wherein my brother had opted for Tamil very oddly as a third language, and the only school that offered Tamil, which was something which we were familiar with because we have some family in Dombivli, was SIA, and that's how we chose to spend that 1 year there. And
there are in fact a grand total of 3 schools in the whole of Bombay which offer Tamil. So
and then once we got done with that 1 year stint, my father chose to move to Thane, which was A, much closer to his workplace, and B, in terms of opportunities, even for my mother, they chose Thane as their final destination, and that's how my mother started her association with Singhania School, and I started off my schooling in Thane. So that's how Aditya got that right, as in I spent some time in Dombivli and I spent some time in Thane. And childhood in Thane was very simple back then. No internet, so it was mainly hanging out with friends. You go with school, you go to school, you come back with the same set of people. And then in the evenings, you get together either with a similar set of people or people from different schools. You used to play cricket, you used to play all sorts of games running around the society or complex, and then you used to get back home, have dinner, spend time with the family, watch something on TV. Usually it was good content, and weekends used to be mostly about playing some more or doing a lot less of the homework and the studies and enjoying a lot more. So it was very simple, very lifestyle that you would be very content with. And what happened is that once we moved up the economic ladder, we moved from one part of Thane to a more swankier part of Thane, which was which is today called Vasant Vihar. And that's how I met with Mayuk. So Vasant Vihar was again a very different experience for me, wherein I had seen the generational change which happened largely because of internet. So we got exposed to all sorts of things on the internet, and our but the whole foundation of having a healthy childhood was still around having healthy relationships with people in your peer group. And that's where I have very fond memories of Mayuk and the people that I went to school with. And interestingly, these people who I have had associations with for the past 15, 18, 20 years, these people are still around. I'm still in touch with them, quite close to them. And we still reminisce about those non-internet-driven experiences, where it was just about spending time with each other. And that was for me how I would think about life when I was in Thane back then. And Thane at that time was distinctly separate from Mumbai, in the sense, the crowd from Thane was very hesitant to introduce themselves as people from Thane at that point in time. Today, of course,
that was until people from Mumbai start moving back to Thane.
Right, exactly. So that was again the other trigger for that cultural shift to take place. And yes, and when I go back, I mean, I recently went back home to Vasant Vihar because my family still stays there. And it's very different. It's very, very, very different. You see how people try and have a good time. And it's something that I just don't associate it with. So there is a lot of noise, a lot of focus on superficiality, and a lot less attention being given to relationships, which I, as I said earlier, was the reason why I consider my childhood to be quite healthy in terms of both upbringing, in terms of having a peer group, and in terms of having that stability in your life. And which is why I still cherish a lot of my relationships, and we have a lot to talk about despite being exposed to internet early on. So
I think that's a good point, right? So yeah, so this is something which really strikes you about growing up in the 90s anywhere in the country, be it the suburbs or be it in the swankier part of the metro. What really strikes you is you had a real paucity of entertainment options to begin with, right? So I think that makes us relate to each other, I think, a lot better than, say, a kid growing up currently, because with all the customized education entertainment options that you right now have, I don't think two kids in different parts of the country would probably be able to relate to each other at some level. So say the Netflix of that time was basically City Cable, right? I don't know how many of you relate. So yeah. Either of you have been. And you had, although we have grown up watching a lot of crappy movies from the 90s, there was a channel called CVO. I very fondly remember those.
We used to have Housie on CVO, right? Like Javed Jafri used to host.
Yeah. And then, exactly. I think CVO was a very local channel. I don't think CVO is a pan-India kind of a channel. It was a very regional, local channel where you would also get advertisements from very local boutique
the
shops.
The sound recording of this podcast is probably better than what we got in CVO.
Better than... And CVO would air some really crappy movies of the 80s, like those Jitendra trying to act young kind of movies. Like there were a lot of movies where Rajesh Khanna and Jitendra at some point were really struggling to stay relevant in the industry. And
it was more to do with paying their bills, Adi. Not less to do with being relevant.
And you had those movies, basically, I think they tried to package it as family-centric movies where you would have these estranged relationships between parents and...
I think one more thing which was the common thread or the red thread there, it was directed by some South Indian fellow, VKKN Rao.
All movies based in Hyderabad probably,
Yeah, Hyderabad or Ooty, and they used to have this very South Indian feel to it because the heroines were usually the voluptuous kinds.
And in those movies, it really didn't matter who the heroine was because essentially they were there for the eye candy aspect of it.
I mean, depending on how perverted you are, you call it that they might qualify as
eye candy. So, Adi, you are the one here who stayed in Dombivli, grew up in Dombivli all throughout your life, right? So, were you staying somewhere else before Dombivli?
Yes. No, my family has been there for the 50 years. In fact, part of my extended family is split between Thane and Dombivli, again, in and around the Vasant Vihar area, which is true for a lot of actually Tambrams in and around Bombay. They are actually concentrated in 3 or 4 different parts of the city. So if you want to take a random guess as to where a Tambram would be from in the Mumbai region, it would probably be Chembur or Dombivli or Matunga or Thane currently. I think that's where the nucleus lies mostly.
And even there in Thane, I think there is a switch. So in the early 90s, it was Vrindavan Society. And after, I think, the dot-com bubble burst, there was a lot of Tambram community which moved to Vasant Vihar.
Vasant Vihar, correct. And I think the new gen Tambrams are all in the farther suburbs as opposed to Chembur, for instance. I think the older generation of settlers were mostly around Chembur. So my family settled in much farther. My grandfather moved into Bombay sometime in the 1930s to 1940s. Back that we go.
There are a lot of Tambrams even in Matunga area, right? Matunga King Circle region.
Yeah. Some really old ones. Like, for instance, my mother and my mother's family, she grew up in Matunga, for instance. My dad has grown up on the other side of the city.
I am sort of an outsider over here because, I mean, I moved to... my father moved to Mumbai or Thane in 1992 December. That was when I was in senior KG or before first standard. And a couple of months later, I moved to Thane from Calcutta with my mom just before my first standard was about to begin. Again to Vasant Vihar region. And it was like, I guess, right after the Mumbai bomb blast or right before the Mumbai bomb blast, something like that, because I do not remember anything about my pre-first standard days in Mumbai, except that there was a tension in Thane about the bomb blast having happened in South Mumbai. So the question is, at least in my part, and I have thought about it quite a few times, that my dad moved to Thane for a bank job. He got transferred with a promotion, basically. And his first office in Mumbai was in Fort. So, I mean, I have often wondered, why did he choose to live in Thane? I mean, of course, it was not San Francisco. Rent was not an issue. Pretty much at that time, maybe Santa Cruz, Andheri, Thane, they had similar rents. But I think I'm going to ask him this question. Why did he choose to move to Thane after all? But going back to that, the growing up was pretty much similar to what Rahul mentioned. It was very, very quiet and serene. Vasant Vihar, as we know today, it was not like that at that time. The bigger roads weren't there. It was basically a forest area. With some housing societies coming up, very, very empty. For a few years, we moved to near the Cadbury Junction. And our school was very close to Cadbury Junction, Singhania. And I used to bike my way to school, crossing the Cadbury Junction twice a day. And also sometimes in the weekends, biking there with my friends. So by bike, I mean cycling there with my friends. And now, I mean, it is not possible to drive a car in that junction. So that is how much the city has changed with influx of a lot of people. I mean, whether the change is good or not, I don't know. I think at least the Vasant Vihar part is changing for better. But my best memories were in the Vasant Vihar part. Later when I moved back to Vasant Vihar again, and when I first moved to Thane, it was in Vasant Vihar. It was really, really good. One thing that I remember distinctly is there was this cable provider. So every few housing societies or every few regions had this one cable wala guy, right, who provided this connection or the subscription to everyone.
Those guys were basically touts of some local gunda, and he'd be there basically for the fact that you'd have ads of the local gunda playing on that cable channel every other day.
He used to sort of force people to buy those stupid housey tickets every Sunday. And it happened for like 6 months or a year, after which I think either the program got cancelled or nobody cared anymore, or someone stood up to him. I mean, I don't know. But your daily entertainment was restricted to that guy. He was the bottleneck for what you're going to digest entertainment wise that day.
Talking of the cable guy, you had this one channel which was entirely under control of the cable guy, if you remember. And you would have movies being aired on that channel at 9 o'clock or 9:30 every night. And the same movie would typically be repeated in the mornings. And most of them would be what is currently considered all those illegal pirated cam rips. And so they would have really crappy prints of these cam rips of a new movie, which they would randomly play. Like, you would never know when a new movie would crop up. So in the 90s, I've ended up watching so many bad movies because we used to anticipate a good movie coming on TV that particular night, because it was entirely random, right? You didn't have the choice of deciding which movie you would watch. So that element of uncertainty, you would end up watching. I remember there is a movie called Boyfriend. I think the hero in that movie was a sidekick to Govinda in typically many movies. And that
Harish,
exactly. I think Harish is the guy who was the...
No. I think I'm ashamed and proud that I managed to get that right.
And I watch movies like Papi Gudiya and
they had this collection of VCRs, right? And they also rented out VCRs. And they had a collection of movies that kids wanted to see. And I remember that my cable wala fellow, he had this multiple series of Tom and Jerry collections, right? And he aired it once in a while.
True. So, those would be in the evenings and once in a while. Yeah.
So, like some weekends I used... Exactly. And some weekends I used to just go to his place and ask for, I want to rent this thing out. Can you give me Tom and Jerry and all? And that bugger, I think at least three times he said, Tom and Jerry is not available, but I have a movie that you will really like. And three times he has given me the same movie. He gave me Aamir Khan's Baazi. I remember that distinctly. And I hated that movie.
Where Aamir Khan actually dances around cross-dressing, right?
I think he was a cop and it was like a thriller action drama.
No, but I remember there is a cross-dressed Aamir Khan in that movie. Is it the same?
I remember
it is that one.
So, then it's probably the same. How was that movie meant for kids?
It's a thriller, apparently. So, back in the 90s, it's supposed to be a suave kind of a new age cinema.
Nobody cares what I wanted to watch. Probably he thought, okay, this is the movie that his parents would enjoy, and just gave it out to me.
The first movie I remember watching this way, renting a VCR, is The Lost World, Jurassic Park. So... And the guy gave me a Hindi version of The Lost World. So if you have watched Lost World, the English version, so the first couple of scenes, these guys take a boat to the island, and the guy who actually runs the boat service speaks in Spanish in the English version. So if you watch the Hindi version of the movie, that guy speaks Marathi randomly, like मला तिथे जायचं नाहीये तसं काही मी संध्याकाळी नाही येणार.
The Hindi that they used in these dubbed versions were so chased at beyond the point that
it's like वो प्राणी वहाँ छुपा हुआ है.
अभी क्या बोल रहे हैं, you know, we are watching a Hollywood movie for Christ's sake. So I mean, that's
and then,
how
growing up, I remember the peer pressures were to be were sort of more simpler than it was today, but it was weird. I remember in 1996, I think I remember this distinctly because I had not seen the movie, and Dilwale Dulhaniya Le Jayenge came out, right? And people went nuts, and they it was kind of a peer pressure that I had to go and see that movie, and I had never heard of that movie because, you know, advertisements were not probably that big as they are nowadays. I mean, it was not, definitely not. So, I mean, I think it was one movie that was probably the first movie that I watched in a cinema hall out of peer pressure. So,
mine was sadly Hum Aapke Hain Kaun. If I'm Hum Aapke Hain Kaun / Jurassic Park, I don't know which one came before. I don't know which is the older of the two. But probably back in the day, Hollywood movies would release probably a year or two after their actual US release dates. Probably, so I'm not very clear about it. But one of these two, yeah.
And they those are heavily edited. As
edited,
in,
yeah.
In one shot, they're saying that, you know, oh no, she's shot and we have to give her CPR. Mm. And then suddenly, just because there is some
mouth to mouth
with the opposite sex, suddenly it gets snipped out. And then there is some random scene which is playing. So you're constantly thinking what the hell happened.
And keep in mind, Pehla Jhnelani was actually making films back in the day. So those were the days when Pehla Jhnelani was a director and a producer. Directing Govinda films, which had much more vulgar things in it. And no one ever cared about any of that. So
basically, so coming back to Thane and Dombivli connection, they were simpler times, I guess, as compared to South Mumbai at that time. But I mean, I don't know. We did not grow up in South Mumbai.
So we used to actually look forward to go that one visit to South Mumbai. I don't know how many of so I had relatives in my most common vacation visits would be to my aunt in Chembur and a couple of my uncles in Matunga. Yeah. And a visit to South Bombay, say Fort, would probably be so rare that it was as good as visiting a hill station for us once in a while. And a typical visit to South Bombay would be some of my cousins would end up spending hours at Fashion Street, location in South Bombay.
So, I mean, our vacations were going back to Calcutta in the summer. And then once we had relatives visiting from Calcutta or from any other part of the country, we took them out. The first thing before doing anything, before going outside Mumbai, let's say before going to Ajanta Ellora or before going to Goa or Pune or whatever. I don't know why we would go to Pune. We went once actually. But we did this Mumbai Darshan. And it was the worst darshan ever. I hated
Mumbai
it the
darshan. Yeah.
First time. Because I had already done the good version of that darshan with my parents, where we selectively went to places. But
and some of these Mumbai darshans would involve like starting all the way from, say, and Gateway of India and ending up in Juhu for some goddamn reason, right? In the evening.
It is probably the worst
Tarapur wala aquarium near Marine Drive. Yeah.
So yeah, I have never seen anything in that aquarium in that the fascinated world. Me.
They probably have dead fishes there by now. I don't know. Yeah. Probably they haven't changed the fishes from.
Is,
they
this,
have fossils
this
probably.
This topic is something that we would most likely come back often in our future recordings or future episodes. But
But how often Yeah, so just to wind this episode in, I don't think we have, do we have Rahul yet still?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So how often would you visit, say, Fort or South Bombay, and what are your
not very often broad when I was growing up. Sometimes we used to go for Durga Puja. That was towards us. So at that time, Thane had one Durga Puja, which right now has split up into 50 or 60 in Thane itself, I guess. I don't know, maybe 20 Durga Pujas in Thane. But at that time, Thane had one Durga Puja. And we went to different pujas towards Khar, Andheri, Bandra. Not exactly South Mumbai, but you know, you could say near South Mumbai. Apart from that, I mean, I did go there with my dad few times a year. Sometimes we went to Gateway of India. We went there a couple of times to go to Elephanta Caves, which was really good. But it was not a daily, it was not a routine or a thing that we would do once a year or something, but whenever there was need.
Yeah. That's my point. Yeah, but that's my point, right? So for people from the suburbs, going to, say, the town would be as rare an event as one would imagine, one cannot imagine currently. I think people in the suburbs now very frequently go right through to South Bombay or even the western suburbs and so on. But,
I mean, the thing is that right now the motivations have also changed quite a lot. Back then, taking your family all the way, I mean, you're talking about someone who's anyways traveling. Those days it used to be 6 day weeks, not 5 day weeks. Monday to Saturday, the man of the house was already traveling. So, I mean, like in Mayuk's case, my father had, I mean, the other thing which is common through all three of us is that we come from very similar backgrounds. So my father also had his workplace in Fort.
My dad would work at Nariman Point.
Nariman Point, right. Yeah. So, and that's where most of these people would work for most of their lives. So for someone who's anyways commuting like a dog from Thane and up to the fag end of the city for 6 days a week,
and I completely realize that now, I mean, when I
would be plan quite troublesome. Of course, but even back then, the motivations were very different. For us, going to a restaurant was a very one-off thing. It's today, eating out is quite common. Back then, it was...
We would look forward to that day where we go out, right? People would dress, I mean, people would dress up,
Dress up, it would be for anniversaries, probably, well, not my birthday, but maybe now and then. But it used to be for only for reserved for some special occasions.
The New Year, in our case, we used to go out every 31st, like every 31st night we would just go out. And that was one advance. So there is this restaurant called Status, I don't know. So that used to be one fond memory of South Bombay that I have from the childhood is going to this restaurant called Status all the way down at Nariman Point. I think that is where we would go because my dad's office was at Nariman Point. And that is how our favorite locations back in the day as a child would be. Like,
one thing that
our parents would actually have fond memories of.
Our generation growing up in Mumbai is, I mean, a certain part of it is true to everyone, but it mostly coincides with us, is our growing up in 90s was also the time when the economy had just opened up. In 1991, right? So we had color televisions, we had products from outside India that came along with their advertisements. So things happened very quickly towards the end of the 90s, in the sense it was going along at a good pace, a very laid back pace in, let's say, 94, 95, 96. And suddenly in 1999, you had the first McDonald's that opened in Thane. And then you had the mall.
Thane.
Malls coming
the very first
up.
Day.
It was a very big thing for me because initially, when we bought new clothes for Durga Puja or New Year, I was taken to a shop which was very busy during that time, as expected. And then the person, not the actual owner, but the sidekicks or the salesperson over there, they used to give you a choice of 5 t-shirts or a shirt.
ये आजकल मार्केट में बहुत चलता है, कॉलेज का लोग, स्कूल का लोग यही पहनता है, दैट इज देयर
सिक्स पॉकेट.
इफ ही वाज इन अ गुड मूड और ही वाज वेरी जेनरस, आई वुड हैव अ चॉइस ऑफ 20, अदरवाइज आई हैड टू चूज समथिंग फ्रॉम लेट्स से 5 ऑफ इट, लाइक देयर वर लाइक 5 लेड आउट ऑन द टेबल, like you know patte bichhaya waisa, matlab they used to have clothes and I have to pick up them.
Did you have a place called Cambridge in Thane? Because Cambridge also has a outlet in Dombivli, so Cambridge is one of these most crowded places during a Diwali or a Dasara, and the guy at Cambridge would act like he's actually from Cambridge. So
when you go to a school during exams, people would bribe their clipboards. People would put their clipboards, pens, pencils, and whatever water bottles in a Cambridge bag and bring it to school during the exams because.
And those bags were really noisy bags. So if you take your pads in that Cambridge bag during an exam, the whole world would know that these are very noisy plastic bags, if you know what I mean. And there were these weird ways of advertising their shops. So the last day of school or probably the first day of school, these guys from Cambridge or someone would be giving you a timetable cardboard on which they'll have their logo on top.
Thane had this thing called as Jyoti Stores. So, Jyoti Stores was where every child growing up in Thane had to buy their books or their entire curriculum from. So, it was like, one-stop shop for your academic year. Okay.
So, looking back,
I think if I think about it, it was downright corruption. Why is it that
Jyoti Stores? So, for stationery, you had Jyoti Stores, and for uniforms, you had Jeevan Jyoti.
And that means that Jeevan Jyoti, right? And why was it that way? And that's my point. For the people who used to teach us about morals and ethics. Beneficiaries. There was some rent seeking happening there.
So my school had a fancier name for a shop which used to sell uniforms. That place was called Smart Romson for some reason. I don't know if he still exists. Smart Romson was the guy selling you uniforms, and then we had a similar guy selling curriculum and books and so on. And they would shamelessly be advertised on the school pamphlets and stuff like that on the last day or the first day of Jyoti school.
Stores, you will remain uneducated for the next academic year. So if Jyoti Store did not have the GK textbook, then you will not have any general knowledge.
Those things... Things have dramatically changed on that front right now. So since I'm associated with my family is associated with running a school, so most books now children buy it from the school in the first place. So they don't have to run around, and most of these notebooks are covered to begin with. They don't have to go through the entire process of covering that notebooks and textbooks.
So when the malls came up,
I think things have changed dramatically on that front.
I can go and wear 20-30 things at my own leisurely pace without worrying what the family standing next to me were trying to buy or looking for more space on the counter. So that was really good. I mean, I could actually make my own choice. There were a variety of choices. So, and it happened quickly during the end of 90s or early 2000s, I would say. I think there are lots of things in common between Thane and Dombivli growing up there, and we are going to come back to it very often in the future.
Yeah. And South Bombay was always this mythical elder brother, right? Oh. It's like the Eldorado for
the first time first time I had a friend from South Mumbai was when I went to college, right? So you have 2003 when we did our ICSC or SSC, basically 10th standard exams, and then 11th and 12th we graduated in high school in 2005. It was very different than 90s. And then we went to college where it was the first time in my life where I met people from South Mumbai. Exactly, exactly. And I mean, it was their misfortune, I guess, that they had to travel to Navi Mumbai. So I and Aditya went to Navi Mumbai in Belapur. Rahul went to Navi Mumbai in Airoli, which was more closer to... So that's another common background. We went to engineering colleges, all three of us, like so-called engineering colleges. Exactly.
Some really premier institutes of Mumbai, I must add.
Exactly. So, yeah. So
quote unquote premier.
How was that jump? Premier. So, what do you guys have to say about it?
So my earliest memories, the first memories of college was, I think it began just after the floods of July 2016, 2005, if I'm not wrong.
So I missed college for the first month, right. Which meant I was not ragged. And
and Tamahashi was a new invention back then. Like one train, so those lines weren't as good as they are right now, right? So... in 2 days, and then you had to.
They were death traps. All of them were death traps. I mean, I just have one anecdote to share here. The frequency of the trains for that line was so poor, and it was so neglected that so Airoli was the first stop from Thane. If you used to take the local
from Thane to
network from Thane onwards, because Thane used to be the starting point. And the train frequencies were so poor that every train, at least during the rush hour in the morning, used to be crammed with people, as with every local train. But this one was even more so because you had students who were carrying their college bags, and there were a host of educational institutes in the New Bombay area, because yes, land was cheaply available. So on one of these journeys, one of our students from our institute, he happened to fall down on the tracks from the train because it was beyond crowded, ends up getting admitted into the hospital, and there was an impromptu rail roco which we all participated in. I mean, for me, that was an experience of sorts, because we were all quite upset at the system.
I remember that rail roco. Being a rebel, I mean, it was very tough for me because our college was in Belapur. It was very far from Thane, and the other option when the rails were not working was this bus, which was.
This was atrociously bad. So those buses. Exactly, yeah. So I have anecdotes from the bus. I think Mayuk, you should finish, and I'll then add to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the buses, which were an alternative, I was on the luckier side of life, because I could take an auto from Kalwa, I mean, Thane East, and then manage to go by auto. But the buses were basically, God's way of telling you that he hates mankind. Because I think the gearbox used to may or may not work. The brakes, if you push the brakes here, you could hear the brakes probably 2 kilometers away. And that was how hard they were. And it used to constantly smell. I mean, it used to smell of fish, of... dairy produce, all sorts of weird smells that used to emanate from that place.
Yeah.
And people used to even study textbooks while they were traveling there. And that was the level of struggle that we went through.
So I have
that changed very soon.
Yeah.
But that was the alternative. I mean, it was literally the devil or the deep sea for us at that time.
So I remember, I have stories of the bus. So for a long part of my first semester, I used to travel by these buses, because Thanewashi, as you just said, was not so frequent. And then you had the other choice was Kurla, so the devil and the deep blue sea. So I don't think anyone should go to Kurla unless their life really depends on it. So that's for another day. So we used to have these buses, which were supposedly in a 30-minute frequency. And those buses were essentially full of engineering college students, so much so that they would drag you in the bus. So the seniors would ride their juniors within the bus. So that's the time they had. And the route that the bus took was even better. So you had Turbe and Mahape and all these so-called Thane Belapur Road industrial belt you would go through.
Exactly.
And by the time you would reach college, your hair would have like a layer of soot on it. And in the first week, there was some bridge or some road which had collapsed in the aftermath of those floods. So these buses would sometimes take like a good part of two and a half hours to get to college. And it was really miserable, those gloomy, dark starting days. And with Himesh Reshmiya playing in the background, the most popular memories of the early stages of college is this stereotypical Himesh hits of the 2000s, like I think Aashik Banaya and stuff like that. Those are, and MP3 in cell phones were a new thing back then, right? So every other guy waiting for the bus would actually be listening to Himesh songs, and you would be forced to listen to those back then. Which was like the pre smartphone era smartphones, actually. And sometimes, so while getting back, I would wait for these buses. Sometimes you would wait for an hour, and you would actually end up getting frustrated as to why you are not getting a bus. But you would wait further because you have wasted 1 hour just waiting for it. So why not? Yeah. Why not waste another half an hour and then go by bus, having invested all the time? So I think that took all of us. I think both Mayuk and in my case, we used to travel by Kubla eventually.
It was a transition for me.
And we stuck to that for the rest of the 4 years.
I am a big fan of coming-of-age movies, right? Be it any language, Indian or European or American. Mm-hmm. So if there was a coming-of-age movie based on my life, a substantial chunk will be dedicated to traveling from home to college for 4 years, from 2005 to 2009. And So you guys mentioned pretty much
that 833 local experience was from
similar to what you guys, put forth here, right? So I had options of taking a bus that was right in front from my home, right in front, dropping me right near the college, and that bus was atrocious, like you said. We had to cross the Kalwa Bridge. We had to go through Kalwa and then enter Thane Belapur Road, which was a Herculean task. I think for a couple of months, I took that bus and then I just I was done with it. Then for a couple of months, until the end of my first or second semester in college, I was taking Thane Vashi. But it was so crowded, the frequency was so bad, I did not want to rely on a bad frequency to commute because it is going to be a daily thing for me.
Because essentially Thane Vashi decided how your life would
and by that time,
you would live your life, right? Because your timing were decided by the train and not by
Pritesh, whom Adi and Rahul, both of you know. He lived in Mulund and he was taking Mulund to Kurla and Kurla to Belapur every day. So I said, okay, at least I have a friend on that route. I would change. So it was good. I mean, for one quarter or a few months, I was actually traveling from Thane via Kurla to Belapur with a pass, with a monthly discounted pass that was meant for Thane Vashi. So So it was that ridiculous in the sense it was not about money, right? And it was not about money. It was basically the same cost. I was lazy to go to my office administration and ask for a new whatever tons of information, my life history, they needed to give me that pass. Okay.
Brings you to the most important guy.
The thing is I remember, I mean, now that you mention it, if you wanted to secure some sort of a concession, as a student, you had to take this piece of shit paper from the institute.
Oh, so there was this.
It is,
and they would
it
give
was,
it to
it,
you.
It was. It was. It was more difficult.
They're throwing a new lease of life at you.
So
and the quality of paper.
Getting a US visa was easier.
So getting used toilet paper.
Yeah.
You actually wipe your ass with a.
So there is this guy called Chandrakant in our college. So Chandrakant's life was essentially making your life miserable. Okay, so Chandrakant's portfolio was that. Like, how miserable can he make the student's life? So you had to approach Chandrakant probably a week or 2 weeks before that concession was actually required. And Mr. Chandrakant would then ask for all your family documents just to give you that one piece of toilet paper, which would actually... And then
but I think that was very stereotypical of college administration per se. They never were there to facilitate you. And the reality, I mean, I will now kind of step into this discussion about our institutes, which I think, looking back, I would say that the sole purpose of their existence was to fleece gullible people of their money. They did not provide quality education. They did not have any infrastructure. All that they did was charge fees, and in return they scarred you. If I reminisce about my days at Datta Mege, I shudder, because the administrative staff was pathetic. It's pretty much the same, I would say, in our area, and as with a lot of other institutes, the quality of education was piss poor. I would actually encourage, if you want to have a good laugh and kind of shed a tear for me at the same time, go to the college website, look up Datta Mege online, and you will see photos of faculty. Only the faces have been morphed onto individuals who are wearing like suits, you know. And it's so pathetic. It is so... The spelling of alumni is incorrect. Half the links don't work. And there were, I mean, I was thinking about it. We had two streams of engineering. One was computer science and the other one was IT. And I could never really make out the difference. How is IT any different from computer science? And no, I can bet my salary on the fact that not a single soul in the institute knew what the difference was between the two. And then we had chemical engineering. And those guys were basically the pariahs of our institute, and they had a lab, and I don't know what they studied in the lab, because the lab was some building in some quarters in the underground basement area, and no one knew what the hell was going on. And those guys in their final year would end up getting placed in IT companies.
Exactly.
So what good is your degree then? I mean, you might as well have studied toilet engineering then. I don't know. But this was the kind of hardship that we had to face.
Yeah.
So after self-flagellation, which was in the means of commute that you guys described, which was pure torture, you reached an institute where you had people who had no bloody idea what they were doing, myself included, had no clue as to how things functioned, and we still managed to get through all this in 4 years. If that does not convince,
I mean, we needed a lot of resilience.
To
get over that.
I don't know. Nothing will. I don't know if anything else will.
The fact that we began our college reminiscing through the train commute says a lot about how uneventful and our college life was, and our memories of our college are
locals.
In general.
So I have never been mugged in the US. The first time I was ever mugged was in...
Yeah.
By mugged, I mean there was a pickpocket, like twice. First, my cell phone was gone, and second, my wallet was gone. It happened in the locals. It happens to everybody. I am no exception.
It happened?
It happened to me in Kurla.
It happened to me at Kurla, particularly at the Kurla station.
It happens to everyone over there. But then the fact that I am making this atrocious journey twice a day, and I am going to an educational institute, which is basically a scam, at that time, it is still a scam right now. It made me think so much that what do I want to do? I mean, how do I get out of this? And it was a very, very, I think I spent 4 years of my life thinking about, not, four, I mean, I was 2 years of my engineering thinking about how do I get out of this? And then I came up with a plan. The education quality was so bad that I pretty much relearned everything in graduate school. Like, nothing that I have learned in college was useful to me ever. And that is 4 years of a higher degree that I'm talking about. Yeah, exactly.
4 prime years. Yeah.
4 prime. And we were 22. I mean, we could have, we were between the ages of 18 and 22. So much potential, something that we could have used. We could have probably done a lot of things. And now I'm not trying to put the blame on someone else or, you know, curse the system. But what I'm trying to say is that these institutes never had the idea of imparting quality education or making a better citizen out of you or making a better human out of it. It was purely to fleece you of your money. There was no other motive there.
So my belief is,
even the peer groups there, I mean, if I was to comment on that, the peer groups there were something. I think Mayuk was spot on when he said that the most that he planned for his life was in those 4 years or 2 years. Something similar happened with me, wherein I decided that I will not go past this in terms of a low point, because I considered that even today, as personal a confession as it may sound, it was, I consider it to date as one of my low points, and I swore to myself that come what may, I will never fall down to this level, because that is the level to which that institute and the whole system scarred me, that I decided that it doesn't matter how hard I need to work, I will make sure I get out of this. And that was the motivation, that it was like, you know, the villain, the Batman villain, the Bane, you know, we were brought up in darkness. We were surrounded by darkness all the time. You never had to use it as a something to hide our flaws. That is something that was a part of us. I think something similar happened with us at that time. And the peer group was something which was a part of that darkness, because no offense to those people that I went to engineering with, but I've made it a point not to stay in touch with those people, as depressing as it may sound, and as disrespectful as it may sound. I don't want to do anything with any memory as far as that institute goes, including the people involved there.
So I have a few anecdotes with regards to the scam that Mayuk touched upon and Rahul just spoke. So my earliest memory of the college was, so you always have this phase where you're looking for what you want to do and so on. So with multiple entrance exams, this was D.Y. Patil AIET, as it was called, was the exam that we had to give. And there was this whole counseling session. They made it sound as if there were a couple of thousand people waiting for admissions in their college. So there is this counseling session, and I think supposedly what they called it was orientation or something. So there were all these families and parents sitting there in this big hall, and then you had our dean who was addressing the audience. And the first thing that we come to know, we hear about this college, was there is this other Tambram couple who is sitting right next to us. I think their daughter or their son, I don't know who it was. So they just tell us, this college is a scam. Do you know they do not have accreditation from AICTE, so which is the accreditation body? So that's what we hear on the first morning that we encounter this place. And then that meant that the next couple of years was entirely lost in fretting about whether this college is actually recognized or whether a degree from here would actually mean anything when we get out of here. They pulled it off. And the first thing that struck, and the as lame as it may sound, their brochure and the lift that they had in college is what sold the institute to me, as lame as it may sound. So So they had a capsule lift. Of all colleges in Bombay, I think they are the only ones to have something like that. A really swanky looking building, but that is probably it. That's their high point. I think teaching, definitely not their high point. And on day one, we had a professor claiming to us that they have designed everything on par with IIT Bombay. I think that's what was the first scam that was sold to us, that their course structures and their semester patterns are all on the lines of IIT. Yeah. And we were all gullible. So D.Y. Patil was more like a transition camp for all of those kids there. I think the attrition rates there were really high, you know.
Until this day, think highly of D.Y. Patil. I know of people who finished their bachelor's degree, did their master's degree and some sort of PhD or MPhil, whatever, and they like that college. I do not know why, but that is another topic for discussion altogether.
But D.Y. Patil is more like Apple in that sense. Like, so it's an ecosystem which is entirely self-sustaining. So you buy an Apple Watch and then you buy an Apple phone and then everything is in this one seamlessly integrated ecosystem. And I think that is what D.Y. Patil is. You do your bachelor's there, you end up doing your master's there, so probably a PhD, and then end up becoming a faculty there. So it's a self-sustaining ecosystem in that sense. Right now the situation is worse.
Colleges like D.Y. Patil and Datta Mehge. And see, Datta Mehge and D.Y. Patil, you can tell that these are old institutes, right? In other cities in the country and in Mumbai, engineering institutes are coming up by the day, right? And you have hundreds of thousands of engineering graduates graduating every year. And a lot of them go to colleges that are worse than us. So, I mean, they might be wondering the same things that we were wondering at that time, like, how do we get out of it? So, I mean, is there something both of you learned that would help these people get out of the rut?
So one thing is, I think a lot of the you basically do not trust your college to judge your academic prowess. I think that's the first thing to keep in mind.
I'll just interrupt you, Rahul.
I think I have had a couple of KTs, or probably at least one KT to begin with. Okay, so and I'm.
Yeah, I'm very much here. I'm just listening into the
interview. Yeah, so I don't think any of their validation actually matters in the long run. Yeah, it does matter.
If I can just interrupt you, Adi, for a moment. When it comes to, I think it's a very good point that you said. At the same time, keep in mind that there is a bare minimum that you need to do. So make sure you stay afloat. Don't drown in the. Don't let the system beat you to a point where you are, you know, refusing to graduate. But at the same time, don't think about it so seriously that one KT and then you feel everything is over. So just do enough to stay afloat.
Don't let it be a metric. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The second thing is that a lot of this evaluation that Adi just spoke about, a lot of it is driven by vendetta at the same time. It is not subjective, it is not objective, and it has nothing to do with you as a student or has anything to do with your performance. This is pure vendetta driven. So if the professor that you are with at the time of evaluation, he probably doesn't like the fact that you are growing a mustache, he'll probably flunk you and there is nothing you can do about it. Yeah. And you'll never even know why is it that you flunked. So it's very vendetta driven. It's not objective, guys. So remember that this hell lasts only for 4 years.
And
sure you don't let it stretch, because as I said, do the bare minimum, because that's all that you need to do.
We had a guy changing electrode polarity in the middle of an exam. So how would you expect any reasonable sane assessment from a guy like that? So at the end of the day, you have to always keep that in mind and take these evaluations with a pinch of salt.
To get a degree is really important. And while you are doing that bare minimum, I think you have to plan what you are going to, if it is getting a job, if it is appearing for some entrance exams or some competitive exams, just prepare for that, right? I mean, start thinking about what you are going to do the moment you graduate.
Exactly. I mean, I think the other thing that you have to realize, and not to play as someone, or I don't want to be the villain here, but at the end of the day, I won't speak for Mayuk and Adi, but I'll speak for myself. I landed in Dattamege because I did not take my entrance exam system seriously enough at that time. So it was a consequence of my actions. So I have to have ownership on this. So there, I will not shirk responsibility there. I screwed up. I dropped the ball, which is why I.
I think we also. I mean, I accepted in the very beginning that the one of the reasons that I landed up here is because of my mistakes in high school. On the other hand, that may not be the answer for everyone. Just because of the sheer number of students appearing for this entrance, you might be a very good student right now and still end up. In a kind of institute that we are talking about.
It's easy to fall through the cracks in a system like ours because most of our systems are designed at rejecting people and not accepting. So right. I think we have very good criteria to reject people, but very little criteria to accept people. And if you have acceptance criteria in a country like ours, you'd probably run out of institutions to go to. I think that's why a lot of...
You'll encounter this very same situation once you're in the...
At multiple points in life.
Especially when you're nearing marriage. But that's a discussion
for a completely different day. But I think at various points in life, the point that you made, that I think we all own up to the fact that we probably didn't have a really good post 12 standard entrance exam phase score at the end of it. But
I always
then that's also the bigger point, right? You can screw up at some point in life and always gather your senses back and then get back on track.
It doesn't mean that you do not deserve anything good, right? I mean, you just have to look for the next door to open.
So, right, and that's what, and the other thing that which I would like to latch on to is what Mayuk said about planning.
Oh my God, think, engineering is a boon if you are looking for time.
I figured that out quite early.
Yeah.
Was the abundance of time that you have at your hand. Free time, yes. I mean, if I could trade my time with someone else and I could sell that time that I have, I would have retired by now. That's how much time that you have.
I think we have probably spent hours having Chole Bature at Belapur station and some crappy
location. You find a way to channelize all that time into something more productive, be it reading research paper.
True. Every year. Yeah.
And so use that time that you have in engineering to find out which door open next. Look at the next opportunity. It could be a job. It could be additional training. It could be another degree that could help you. So in my case, it was my MBA degree from IIFT, which I cherish a lot. I have a lot of positive experiences attached to it. So for me, that was a huge change. I worked before that. So there was a journey that I had to do even after Dattamege. But it will take some time for you to recover from these experiences. But you will get through this. I mean, this time will pass. So you just need to be bold enough, have enough faith in you and hang in there because give it 4 years.
And
trust
I think in the later episodes, we are going to touch upon the fact that
because that is what will drive you.
We actually managed to turn around otherwise, a lot of things. I mean, right now, it wouldn't bother me if I do not put my DY Patil credentials in my CV. But we had to go through that stage where it was on our CV. And now we can very proudly take it out of our CV.
And bear in mind all this in hindsight, but we always had to go through that existential struggle and trying to convince your own self that you are worth something better than this degree and this college, right? Because I had flunked a course in which the faculty would actually not turn up to class like 3 out of 5 days a week, and how do I even consider it as a fair assessment of my ability to clear that course and so on? So it made zero sense, and it, once you have a detached perspective of it this far away from that exact time point, it all feels a lot easier to digest. But as Rahul at one point said, when you are in that very moment, like, I think it feels a lot heavier than it actually is.
Very close to me here in California. His name is Rohan Salantri, and he, at one point of his life during engineering, he used to live in the same housing society that I and Rahul live in, were living at that time. And then few weeks back, he told me that I did not know Rahul, Rahul did not know me, and we bonded over the fact that we failed the same exam in engineering. Yeah, exactly.
And the other exam that we were about to fail, we realized the day just before the exam that we didn't have the textbook. And another testimony to how fucked up the system is, we had, because I mean, you, given that your university does not have accreditation, I'm sorry, I'm taking a dig at you right now, but we were from the glorious University of Mumbai. And our fantastic university system basically spawned this horrible being called three-day notes or one-day notes, which basically was a repetition or a copy-paste of all the exam papers of that particular subjects, which used to be held twice a year, once for the regular students and once if you flunked the subject. And they used to basically be an assortment of the questions and the corresponding answers. And it was very, very easy to figure out what, or very predictable, because it used to be the same bank of questions which used to be repeated. And basically the day prior to that exam, we ended up buying the textbook from a local neighborhood, a second-hand shop, not even, we just basically, he had just one copy, we bought that one copy, we did an all-nighter, and both of us barely managed to pass that examination. And of course, we flunked the other one. But that is how credible these evaluations are. I mean, for something that you just studied a night before, you just wake up the next day, you know, have your coffee, go and give the exam, and then take a shit and forget about it.
It's all
that
in
is how seriously these exams and evaluations are.
So much in the temporary memory part of your brain that you probably cannot afford to do anything in between the time you finish reading and you go to the exam. It's that bad. Yeah.
I mean, there were circuits we just had to, I mean, circuits, the logical way of practicing a drawing or a circuit is that you actually do it on paper.
So,
used to have a look at it.
So in from my perspective, to put it into context,
and we used to
you actually worked
and
hard for one night, right?
From those
and the situation in D.Y. Patil was so bad that if you actually really worked hard, there is a chance that you might fail. Addy right here.
True.
People ace an exam by studying his notes.
Actually, ends
he
up failing in
D.Y.
Patil. That's
somehow failed that exam.
So that is a very interesting course. So this is on something which I later went on to do my PhD on.
So
this is something to do with
in our
course,
batch,
and I was genuinely interested in
together,
that one course
60,
where I ended up being genuinely interested
notes.
In. So you had this, so D.Y. Patil had this habit of shadily putting up the exam results on the notice board. And it would typically be done around 6:30 or 7 when none of us would be around. So only the Navi Mumbai gang would be in and around the college to actually look at those results. So I get an SMS back in the day saying, oh, you failed. So I said, where did I fail? So I just checked with them, where did I fail? So they said, it is this so-and-so exam that you failed. So I'm like, you can't be right. So you just go back and check again. And so he tells me, yeah, you failed in that very exam. So I ended up going and confronting my own faculty there. The guy says, I didn't fail anyone in this exam. I don't know. There is no way you could have failed. So I then follow up with the exam cell. The exam cell says, there is nothing like this. So you just pass in the next exam and you will get through the degree eventually. But that's the kind of advice our exam. So the exam cell was held at so high esteem by all of us because we couldn't piss them off at any cost, right? Because I think they are the ones who dictated exam results at the end of the day. So none of it eventually makes any sense if you look at it now.
And that's, if I could just ask you, Adi, what do you have a PhD in? I mean, if you could just connect us to that.
So I ended up doing I ended up doing my PhD on something computational biology. And this is the only thing remotely related to computational biology during my bachelor's.
And you flunked that.
And I flunked that. So
and you can... today you are at Harvard as well.
Yeah, so I don't think. Okay. I think you can always go back and reassess.
Kids out there who are probably listening to this or might listen to this, this is how seriously you should take your school evaluations. So
it's not that you shouldn't take it seriously, but then again, if things go wrong, there could be like myriad of reasons which actually make things go wrong. So, yeah.
And what was your experience like? And now I would like to ask both you and Mayuk, because I personally had a fairly positive experience after Dattamege. But what was your experience once you got out? I mean, what is it that you did?
I think we need to start one step before that.
Yeah, so there was an early phase during my master's and my PhD where it was all about like proving myself.
I think we were lucky in the sense that we had supportive families, that they understood that we are aiming for something.
Exactly.
For example, they knew very well that we were aiming for higher studies. We were not forced to sit for job interviews. But on the other hand, apart from them being supportive, on the other hand, we had nothing to show for. We did not have a job and we did not have any admission letter from any place. So both of our plan was to do some research, get some research experience before going for higher studies somewhere. And that is where the story starts. Yeah, 2009.
So we ended up in the summer, which I think the summer after we graduated, probably, when we finished 2009. I think that's when we took those 2 months to basically roam around the whole of Bombay.
We have actually published a paper
knocked the doors
from our undergraduate project, and that is a different story. But we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that later.
And which we are not very proud of, to put it out here. So we ended up spending 2 months basically just knocking the doors of different professors in all reputed institutes, and none of them actually entertained us to begin with. So we wrote emails to probably 50 different labs and none of them replied. And most of it was, again, due to the fact that we belong to D.Y. Patil and not some more reputed institute. So we ended up going to different labs, and at some point, I think we got responses from two groups, one in IIT Bombay and one in TIFR. And I think that's where we got a semblance of hope that, okay, we can move to higher things in life, in that sense, in academia to begin with. I think at some point, if you keep getting rejected by a lot of people, it also hardens you. In academia also.
Yeah.
And then, because you have nothing to lose at the end of the day. So you come with basically zero reputation behind you, and you can start from scratch.
You will have to work hard to get over the bad phase. Opportunities will not come to you on a platter. You have to work hard for it. But there is hope. There is hope in this. For example, me and Adi, both of us were applying for graduate school in the US. And we did not get an offer of our liking. We did have offers, but not the ones that we want, because this time we wanted to really go to a reputed place, right? So we had offers which we did not take. And at that time, I do not remember who, but a random person I do not know, a lady I do not know, told me you know, don't worry, when one door closes, there are other doors which will definitely open. And that was what my chance of going and working in TIFR was. Because the moment I stepped in, I knew that, you know, it is a positive change. And the same thing happened with Adi when he got into a lab in IIT.
Yeah, the lab in IIT, I ended up working for 6 months for no money. So there are some points in life where you have to pay that cost, right? So I ended up working 6 months there and then decided to give other entrance exams. So we had a decent GRE score going for us. So I think all of that gives you confidence. And somewhere all the stigma of your bachelor's degree actually gets washed away when you have reasonable scores in other exams. So Rahul would attest to it, right? So he had really good scores in his management entrance exams. I think...
The thing for me was that the Dattamage experience scarred me so much. And as I told you earlier, that I made a promise to myself that I won't go low any lower than this. And that really pushed me the way it was for Mayuk and Adi to make sure that they go into an institute of repute and which actually had some credentials. That drove me to apply, make sure that I apply only for the best management institutes in India. And that's how I landed at IIFT and then subsequently I'm in Sweden today working for IKEA. But that one thing of realizing that, okay, I've done my time now. I think I deserve a break and I'm going to put in all the effort. And this will go exactly the way I want it to be, executed. That single motivation alone for me was something which kept me up day and night, not out of worry, but purely out of determination. And that is what will help you undo what you did. Not undo, well, at least get over what you went through in your horrible 4 years of engineering, because this is not just a story about us. It's, I think, a story of a lot of other people who might be going through this or who have gone through this. So you would actually welcome any stories from anyone who's listening. But make sure that you stay at it in terms of not compromising on the next goal that you plan to achieve.
Good to not lose focus of the fact that you can always take time. Like, once you graduate and if you feel you had something subpar going for you during your undergraduate, it's always
good. Does not matter. It is...
Yeah. And it's not even, I think calling it a loss would be, I think, too harsh a word, because at some point it's good to step back and look at what you want actually from life at that point. Because a lot of us take decisions going with the flow at that point where you really do not know what exactly you want from your academic career, right, or your professional career.
We did not really spend time hanging out with people that were not leading us anywhere, right? I mean, it's not that we chose such people. Such people happened to be there with us. So, both of us knew about higher studies. Both of us had a good basic understanding of scientific concepts that would be useful to us.
True.
And, both of us knew, in the sense, what we have to do for our next steps. And it was same with Rahul, right? I mean, we were there to motivate each other, you know, sharing the success and pains. So, you just need to be around people who are supportive, and, you know, someone will show you the way. You know, it could be anything.
I think one more thing that I would like to add here is that aside from knowing what is it that you want, that to allow you that awareness to guide you, what the other thing that helps you here is being aware of what is it that you definitely don't want to do. I think you also need to make a list of the things that you're pretty sure about not getting into. For me, it was ensuring that I would not do an IT-based job. Again, not disrespect to that profession as a whole. It's just that I was not cut out for it. I did not believe in it. I did not think that I would be stepping out of the rat race once I got into the whole rut of getting into an IT company, going through their orientation, learning code and doing all of that, and then continuing to do my MBA. I would be another brick in the wall, and that I wanted to make sure I was not. So in that process, I think one of the learnings that I got from all of this was being sure about what is it that I definitely don't want to do. The other, I would say, positive here was that there were so many people that I was around and spent some time with on and off, that you tend to realize, okay, this is not what I would like to be. And I think we have, between three of us, I think we have loads of examples. And these need not be people that you went to university with. It could be people
in your family,
your college professors, your family. And then you lose your inhibitions, and then you suddenly have that moment of clarity when you're trying to look at people, not really trying to judge them, but basically putting yourself in perspective, as opposed to what is it that they stand for or what they believe in. And that is when you realize that, okay, this is not how I would like myself to be 5 years from now or 3 years from now. So and it was quite an enjoyable experience, because a lot of these people we have in common between the three of us. And even if we talk about them today,
I think that's a topic for an entirely different podcast, right? Like, that we have enough material in that sense. Yeah. From people.
Like, I mean, there was this guy that you told me about, which I still think about and laugh. Is there is this guy who used to drink so much. Even in his college iCard, his eyes are red.
So, you know, there is one stark memory that actually drove me to greater heights later on in academia. So I gave this one KT exam. So I'm surrounded by all these people who I've never seen in my life. Yeah. Right. So they claim to be students of my same batch, but I had never seen them in their entire semester. So here I was thinking, what am I doing in the company of all these guys? And what brings me here at the end of the day? So
I
think those are moments which generally define you as a person eventually, that I definitely do not want to be here. And yeah.
Exactly. So a couple of them, we were discussing our exam schedule, and they just told me,
and don't get me wrong, many of those are really good human beings
on this day. Like, so that is one month after actual exam starts. And it's like, I'm not sitting for the actual exam in any case. I'll just go for the KT exam after 1 month.
And there were package deals, you know. So, like, some of them would say, like, I'll just clear one of it. If I clear one, the guy will actually settle me through the other three exams that I failed in. So, they had these package deals where they would pay, like, 5 or 10,000 rupees and everything was done and dusted by the end of that very semester.
Years of college,
without having to fret about,
the people that I and Rahul used to hang out with, we had loads of fun. And everybody has their own stories. I mean, we learned a lot from each other, and the key point is not to give up. And like Rahul was saying, make a list of things that you don't want to do and you don't want to achieve. I mean, on a lighter note, the number one thing on my list was hotel management. It's like, no, I do not know till this date why that degree exists, and something that will not. So you make when you come up with 20, 30 things that you cannot do, then you will know, okay, this is what I have to do for opening up other doors.
Yeah.
And don't, or at least you may have some clarity.
And don't fall for these career counselors and the courses they say is perceived to be the sunrise sector and so on. All these cliched jargons that they come up with.
Yeah, you would have heard this in 12th. Beta mechanical kar lo ye, aajkal bahut chal raha hai, and all that crap.
It is no different.
The same uncle.
Yeah, it is no different to that guy from Cambridge selling you those three t-shirts. I think they both are essentially selling you the
not meant for you.
Different products, I think, using the same punchline.
Is not easily gettable.
And there is no linear path at the end of the day. So these academic breaks, which they call, are unnecessarily stigmatized, and there is always more time than you think you have. I think that's what I would like to say.
I think in the
fantastic.
Okay.
I mean, we got a lot of different points.
I think we have. We have diverged from where we started off from.
End this episode,
I think it would be a good point
to come back with more stories from our lives, our experiences, and our opinions. Right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And probably more fluid conversations in the future. And to all those grand total of a couple of people listening to us, thank you for joining us. Yeah.